Welcome to today's sixth CEU seminar entitled Grieving with Grace. I'll be your presenter for today's seminar, and my name's Michelle Sparks. I am the owner and director of River of Life Professional Counseling. We're a private practice in suburban Columbus, Ohio area, and this seminar is pre-approved for six continuing education units for licensed social workers, licensed independent social workers, and supervising social workers in Ohio. Please note we are not approved for social work assistants. We are also approved for this seminar for six CEUs for licensed professional counselors, licensed professional clinical counselors, and supervising counselors in Ohio. We are not approved for any level of marriage and family therapists in Ohio. Thank you for joining me for today's seminar. And as we talk about this topic of grieving, it's near and dear to me. I have several clients who come to me regarding this issue of grief. And one thing we'll notice as we talk about this topic of grief today is just how individualized the grief, loss, and mourning process can be. We'll talk about a broad array of different sorts of cases and grieving experiences. This seminar, just to give you a heads up, isn't about necessarily specifically death and dying, but much more broad in terms of all-encompassing losses. It could be changes and life transitions, about moves, a child changing schools, issues like disenfranchised grief, like infertility, or hopes or dreams feeling shattered. It could be things like loss of a pet, or having to change jobs and make a career transition later in life. There's a lot of different issues you'll see, but one thing that will be common to all of them is that there's a grief process that needs to be individualized and tailored to each of our clients. So as we look at doing grief counseling, I'd like to start by just talking about what is it in terms of the skills that a therapist should have if he or she would like to reach out to that type of client. So we should have some specialized skills in terms of managing death, dying, bereavement, loss and change in general. Keep in mind, and I'll say this several times throughout today's seminar, that with grief, there is not a one-size-fits-all approach. It's important to be very high in Rogers' process variables of empathy, of unconditional positive regard, of meeting the client where he or she's at, really hearing their individualized narrative. Something that to us we might not think is a big loss per se may be devastating to our client. It's how that client perceives it and what's a loss to him or her. Keep in mind we're not just talking again about death, but we could be talking about a loss of status, a loss of title or position, a loss of values, a loss of things that someone holds precious and dear in their heart. One of the things that's very important if you choose to be a therapist who deals with this issue of grief is making sure you have that ability to really maintain focus on your client's narrative. It can be emotionally draining, and it's important to be able to hear the client's narrative throughout every stage of that grieving process in a very empathic way. We can be prone, when we hear those types of narrative, to compassion fatigue, where we really relate so deeply with the client, where it can drain us, where after hours we can kind of think and reflect more about what they're talking about. So it's important to make sure as we're doing that kind of work that we have a good support system with our colleagues, other people at the mental health setting we're working at, other colleagues who've also dealt with clients with grief and loss issues, because it takes a special kind of skill set for that. We also should be someone who's goal-directed. Grief and loss can feel rather ambiguous to the person going through it. They can struggle, as we hear about today a lot, with this idea of meaning-making. Whether someone knows that there is a planned loss, like a health issue that is progressing over time, or whether it's a sudden thing, like a suicide, a homicide, a crime, or an unexpected loss, or something like disenfranchised grief, again, it's really vague to the person going through because they're struggling with the why, with the trying to make sense of it. So one of the things I work with clients a lot about, one is affirming that why is a natural question. All of us like to sort through and try and make sense of things in our life. But why also is a dangerous question, because it misleads us into thinking that if only I understood why, it would make it better. The fact of the matter is, regardless of whatever the reasons or factors could be that play into it, the more important questions are what and how. This requires a therapist who can help a client transition into forming goals. Yes, I've experienced a hurt and a pain, a loss, but what do I want from here? How do I want to hold on to the memories of the person, the pet, the values, the things I'm going through? How do I want to reconfigure my life to embody the values, the hobbies, the transitions, the holidays, the rituals that are meaningful to me, but possibly letting go of or changing things? So this requires a therapist who can help the client to be goal-directed. Sometimes the goal direction might be something as simple as keeping on track with daily ADLs. We see many of our clients who things that were such an easy routine, like bathing or doing certain types of house cleaning, become really challenging. I remember one case I was talking to a colleague about a while back, and there was a man who, as funny as it sounds, forgot how to boil water to cook food. He just was so immersed in his grief experience that he's like, gosh, how do I do the things I was doing routinely before? So again, it's not abnormal for our clients to suddenly just feel taken by surprise. And keep in mind that that shock can happen even months or years later. It's not just the initial shock that many people somewhat expect, but even years later, there can be moments of what we'll talk about today called grief bursts, a term that was coined by Alan Wolfelt in his literature. So doing grief counseling requires a deep empathic understanding. It requires a respectful acknowledgement of the client's pain. We also need to have wisdom about the timing of the interventions we need. As I said before, there is not a one-size-fits-all approach. Remember years ago, we used to think about the stages of death and dying in terms of first you do this, then you do this, then you wrestle with the loss, then you come to grips, and then you let go. Well, we know, as I'll talk about today, that they are not step-by-step linear stages as we once thought. There's a lot of back and forth. There might be a time where a client feels like they've quote-unquote come to grips as much as they're able with the loss. Then all of a sudden, something that maybe other people around them don't understand throws them for a loop. I had a client months ago who had a loss of a death of a loved one and felt like she was doing a bit better in terms of getting back on track with her day-to-day activities, working on our counseling skills, setting assertive boundaries with those around her about what she needs or doesn't need as she goes through the mourning process. But then all of a sudden, someone was eating a Snickers. Now you might think, a Snickers bar, what big deal? You know, what does that have to do with anything? but for her, Snickers was the favorite candy of the person that she had just lost. It really held a meaning for her. In my own life, a year ago, my dad suddenly died, and it really threw me for a loop. It was a sudden traumatic death. While he was older, we were headed to celebrate my parents' 50th anniversary in another state, and on the way, he had a heart attack while driving. So, interestingly enough, all of us in the family processed that differently. But I can relate to my client, who had the almost like shock experience regarding the Snickers, because things that were significant to my dad and I associated him a lot with were he'd always pop popcorn at get-togethers. His favorite food was a good cheeseburger. He loved to do word searches and game puzzles. And sometimes when I see those things, as silly as it might sound, there's that association. And we have to really listen to our clients' metaphors and associations. So we need to use wisdom about timing interventions. The therapist, if you're a grief therapist, you need to make sure that you have some self-care strategies. There needs to be a time period, possibly before you leave your work setting and go home, to kind of debrief, to think through this. You know, whether it just involves some reflecting or some neutral mindfulness time, prayer, discussion with a colleague who also does grief work, something that helps balance you out. It's also important that each of us, as we do this grief work with clients, understands our own stories of loss and grief. You know, we'd like to say our life stories don't experience our work, but they really do. I'm not saying we should ever impose our values at all on a client, but our narratives do influence our understanding of what the client's going through. So I think the best approach we can have if we're trying to be merciful and give grace to a client who's going through grief is to come at it with the approach of, help me understand your narrative. Help me understand. I may have had this and this in my own life, but tell me a little bit about the important components of what you've gone through with this loss, grief, and mourning. And in so doing, we honor our clients' individual differences. So I'd like to talk with you about what I'm going to call the stages of grief. Again, they're not step-by-step stages. What I actually do is I use handouts with my clients about these different stages or factors that are components of the mourning process. And usually as I go through this and give them the handout, the client will jump in and say, yeah, that's me, that happens. Or, no, not really that part, but this other part. So they can tailor it to where they're at when they're coming to you. So one of the components we see with some clients is shock. There's this sense of being caught off guard. And it's not just the traumatic crimes, unpredictable stuff, but even things like when we know someone has a terminal disease, even other things, there's sometimes almost not a real readiness no matter what. No time's good to have to go through that process. So it's not uncommon for someone to have shock, not just initially, but again, during the grief bursts that can occur at anniversaries, triggers, memories of certain things attached to the loss, or even many years later. There's also another component called disorganization. It's the sense that like things are just turned upside down, like this can't really be my life. I mean, this seems surreal. This has to be someone else. No. Then another component we see with clients dealing with grief is a searching behavior. That goes back to what I made reference to earlier about meaning making. Most people, as much as 80 to 90% of people in certain literature, do go through some level of trying to make sense of the changes, the transition, the loss, the things that don't seem to make sense. For some people, it's almost like they have to think of, well, there's got to be a life lesson behind this. Or some people might do a spiritual searching of, okay, what's God trying to tell me? Some people might, you know, just try different ways of making sense of it. But also keep in mind, not every client does that either. Remember, there is not a one-size-fits-all. I've had clients who maybe are not very spiritual or do not do much searching. They're just very matter-of-fact of, well, this loss happened. Great. Now, crud, I have to deal with it. And that's the way they approach it. So we need to individualize to each client. Many of our clients come to us, though, when they're coming with presenting concerns because of what I call the emotional components of the mourning process. Many of our clients will call us saying they're sad, they're tearful, they're depressed, they can't stop thinking about the loss, it's just replaying in their mind. They may feel like their day-to-day activities are disrupted. There may be anxiety that maybe they didn't have before of, oh no, if this could happen, what other surprises around the next bend? What if? I have clients who, after going through some type of loss, basically started assuming the worst, catastrophizing, and wondering about almost every situation in their life. Uh-oh, what if today something, quote, bad happens? There's other emotions our clients may struggle with, such as guilt. This reevaluating of almost like regrets. Oh, I should have said this. I could have done this. Maybe I should have spent more time with this person. Maybe I should have taken these actions or been more outspoken about my values. Maybe I should have, when I had the time, done A, B, and C. It could be guilt and regret about themselves, or it can be a sense of feeling awful about what they think someone else should have done. And that might even involve some anger. Why didn't the doctors do more? Why didn't my siblings and family members rise up and do more? There's this sense of what should have happened, what's just, what's right, versus what happens. And there might even be anger at the person who died, the pet, the situation. There's that real sense of it was supposed to be this certain way, but it went another way. So a lot of times the grief therapy I do with clients, we look at the cognitive, the dissonance between this is what I thought would happen at this age and stage of my life versus this is what is happening. There also could be emotions like jealousy. Why in the world do these other people get to have happy lives? Why do they get to have a home when mine burned in a fire? Why are their kids still alive when my kid was killed by a drunk driver? Why does this other person get to stay with this company for 30 years and have a good retirement? And mine, I'm having to restart and try and find a job when I'm 60 with a new company when I should be getting ready for retirement. Feels mighty unfair. So unfairness is a big component of a lot of what we might be talking with clients about. Sometimes we're helping them identify those cognitions, those expectations. There may be shame over how do I admit what the feelings of loss truly mean. This is especially pertinent if you're dealing with cases with suicide, homicide, or disenfranchised grief. I've had colleagues, I've had other clients, people who've told me that there was someone close to them who completed, not just attempted, which is another type of loss, but completed suicide. And that many family members would give another explanation for it because they didn't want the shame of, oh, we have someone who did this. I remember one lady who was a nurse saying that a relative of hers was one of the was on the police force, and his wife for years and years gave all kind of other explanations than the fact that he did complete suicide. Then we have a sense among some of our clients of protest. It could be protest, anger, rage even, towards the medical community for not doing enough, towards God for, God, I thought you were supposed to be a helper. I thought you were supposed to intervene, but you let this thing happen. Why did this change? Why did this disease? Why did this unhappy life event happen? Why to me? I find with most of my clients, one of the biggest things they're challenged by is how a lot of us grow up with this belief, if I do the good, right, strong, moral, ethical things, if I'm well-intentioned, if I'm a nice person, pretty much nice things will happen. And then bad, evil people, bad things happen. But what happens when I've been a well-intentioned, good person, when I've been caring, giving, and whatever, and it just seems like horrible things happen? When life's not linear, I find that that's one of the biggest areas of cognitions we have to deal with many of our clients. Because there is oftentimes that sense of unfairness. Now, the literature uses a term called letting go. Personally, I don't like that term because I think it's a big misconception to our clients that there's some magical thing that we finally do and we say a final goodbye to whatever the situation is, whatever the trigger for grief is, and then poof, things are better. Instead, I look at how do we reconceptualize things. I even say to my clients, you know, there's probably people in your life who give what we call bumper sticker answers. Little one-liners like, well, they're in a better place. Well, you know, this can be a new start for you. God's grace is sufficient. You can handle it. Oh, come on, you're a strong person. You have all of us. Well, you have your other whatever. You have skills. You'll figure it out. I believe in you. And even the messages that at first sound positive really are a mixed bag there, where people feel like, you know, kind of condemned about not being able to have their own grief experience. So I reframe in my counseling sessions this grief and mourning and loss experience to how do we reintegrate the narrative? We'll talk later about the many different sorts of therapy we can do with our clients who are grieving, and one of them being narrative therapy. I particularly like that because it acknowledges the story of what has surrounded the mourning and the loss, but it also moves beyond it to you get to be, the client gets to be the author of the narrative. He or she gets to pick who the characters are, how involved they are or not, and what the next chapters might be. It's a little more empowering for the client. You might have heard me earlier mention a man by the name of Alan Wolfelt. He has a lot of literature out there, and he talks quite a bit about this issue of mourning, loss, and grief. He's identified, and you'll hear this repetitively in his books, what he calls the six needs of mourning. The first one he states is to accept the reality of the death. Now, keep in mind when I'm using the word death, it could be loss. It could be change. Anything that feels death-producing. Anything that might produce in our clients a sense of sadness, anxiety, a search for meaning-making can also fit that. How do I accept the reality of this thing in life that's felt like it's turned my life upside down? The second one is let myself feel the pain of the loss. That's challenging because, again, a lot of times our clients come to us with significant people in their life, giving them these one-liner bumper sticker answers, giving them these, oh, just do this, just think of it this way. But they don't know the depth sometimes of what our clients are going through. My clients say that one of the most freeing things that I've said to them is allowing them permission in the moment to have the safe setting in the office with me to ask themselves, maybe even several times a day, what do I need now? I tell them that there's nothing wrong with that changing from moment to moment. One part of the day, it might be, wow, I better keep busy because my mind's just spiraling about all these memories and thoughts and evaluations. Another time, it might be, you know what, I need some space just to be alone. I've had more than one client who said that they've benefited in their morning experience of just sitting in a recliner by themselves and not hearing anyone else's opinion, that sometimes that's helped. Sometimes having some mindfulness things has been helpful, whether it's sitting in the park, or for some people, they call their car their bubble, just a little, you know, area where I'm physically away from the triggers of what's making me spiral. So again, these six needs of mourning: accept the reality of the loss, let yourself feel the pain of the loss. Third, remember the person. Again, that could be the pet, the person, the issue, the value, who died, or the thing that changed. There has to be a way to keep that alive, to whatever degree would be beneficial for the client. Again, it's all about the client. I've had some clients that it's been, in their estimation, more beneficial to pack up things and not look at memories, objects, certain things that were triggering for them until there was a time of readiness. Other people, they almost wanted to make a shrine to that. I remember one lady, her husband had died during the COVID time recently, and for her, he collected jackets and he wore certain type of hats. She said that there was a place in their house where his collection of jackets were at, and where this one corner she'd keep his hats. And so there were times in her mourning where she wanted to go and sit and look at the stuff and remember how it was to see him in those things. There were other times she didn't even want to go to that room. She would have to stay in the guest room of their house or be away from that. The fourth need of mourning that Alan Wolfelt cites is develop a new self-identity. I found with many of my clients, this relates to them having to reevaluate the family of origin messages, the things that they have had through the years. Again, when you're getting a lot of input, oftentimes unwanted, from other people about how you, quote-unquote, should handle this loss-type issue, it's important to be able to have some healthy assertiveness skills. And I prepare my clients for the fact that not everyone in their life may like that. Some people might think they're a pain in the neck. Some people may have their own style of grieving and try and pressure the client about grieving the way they do. The fifth need of mourning that Alan Wolfelt cites is the search for meaning. So allowing whatever that process looks like in an individualized manner for our clients. And then finally, letting others help you. Not just now. Not just within recent times after that loss or change or transition, but for a while in the future. Now, there are several areas of services that may need to be provided to our clients. One area is nursing. Now, I'm talking about this so that we can be aware of when we need to make referrals or look into community resources. Many of our clients, if there's health issues for themselves in reaction to loss and mourning, or for someone else that's going through transition or they're dealing with, may need nursing. They may need things like home health care, physical therapy, pain management. I mean, that's huge. Some people store some of their stress in terms of physical pain. And what happens when our client oftentimes comes into us, not just for emotional or psychological effects of mourning, but physical pain. I've had clients that I've had to complete some work disability paperwork for. And I'm thinking of one lady in particular who had a number of physical pain symptoms and was seeing 5 different specialist doctors in the community for things. She was getting cortisone shots for one type of pain. She was on other medicine for another pain, going to physical therapists for different kind of pain. So we also can make referrals in terms of personal care and therapy that's needed. Case management services. Keep in mind that we need to operate within what our license says. So if you're a therapist, a psychotherapist, or a counselor, or a clinician, you need to be doing office-based psychotherapy. So if there's areas where maybe case management is needed, which is often a consideration with grief and loss and mourning, it might be appropriate to do a referral or connect to a social service agency in the community. This can include things like advocacy, help with arranging details, referrals for consultation, things like record keeping, following up, skills in the community. It could be anything from how do I get groceries, how do I make doctor's appointments, transportation.